Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about shoulder pain on the show today with our two expert physical therapists, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to have you back. And Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And Jill, thank you for joining us as well.
Happy to be here on this nice sunny day.
So as we talk with these two, I hope you'll join in with your questions. Do you need advice on relieving shoulder pain or other discomforts in your body? Maybe a repetitive motion in your wrist or shoulder increases pain for you. Hope you'll join in the conversation. You can reach us by calling 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill, let's start with you. You told us there's been a change in how to address shoulder pain, and tell us about that change.
Right. So traditionally, you know, shoulder pain is just this broad, all-encompassing diagnosis. And treatment for shoulder pain has been kind of all over the map as well. Do passive modalities like ultrasound, extracorporeal shockwave therapy, laser. Is that the mainstay? What about exercise? What types of exercise should we be doing? So there was a really nice study that came out a couple of years ago, and basically they summarized the systematic reviews that had been done. What that means is they took all the research that had all the summary papers, and they summarized the summary papers. It's like the cliff notes of all the research that's out there. And they looked at the various interventions for people with what we call subacromial shoulder pain, or pain right under that arch in their shoulder. And they did a really nice job of kind of breaking it down and then explaining how robust the research was that supported these different interventions. And at the end of the day, the take-home message was big thumbs up, or research that supported our favorite intervention, exercise. They found that therapeutic exercise, or intervention specifically targeted towards the shoulder and the scapular area, were beneficial. They were kind of the mainstay of all the rehabilitation programs. In addition to that, they found that adding manual therapy, i.e. the physical therapist does specific mobility exercises, whether it's a joint mobilization or a specific stretch, something like that, actually worked as a catalyst, or actually was very beneficial in addition to the therapeutic exercise. The other thing that they found was beneficial were corticosteroid injections if they were ultrasound guided. Lori, do you want to talk a little bit about that part?
Yeah, sure. So definitely therapeutic exercise, specific therapeutic exercise that is designed, supervised, progressed by a physical therapist, is the mainstay of treatment. Sometimes people are doing what they need to do and they're doing all their exercises, but they have so much inflammation in their shoulder that they just can't get over the hurdle. And so a corticosteroid injection can beat back that inflammation, a focused injection, and that is not just sort of a, you know, oh, let's just inject somewhere around your shoulder, but they use an ultrasound to make sure that it gets into the area that is inflamed. Typically, that's the bursa. You don't want to inject around a tendon, especially your rotator cuff tendon. That's very unhealthy for that tendon, but it's useful in into that bursa, where it can shrink down the inflammation in that bursa, make more room for your rotator cuff tendon. So that in combination with the exercise. So it's not just the injection, but the injection to sort of open the door for the exercise to be able to be progressed so the patient can improve.
What's the most frequent cause of shoulder pain in your experiences?
You know, that's such a great question. I would say, first of all, rotator cuff tendinopathy or wear and tear of the rotator cuff is happening with such a great occurrence as we age that it is now really considered part of the natural aging process. To have rotator cuff tendinopathy is relatively common. So I would say that probably with the general population, what we see is a overuse of the shoulder in a joint that probably has some subclinical arthritic changes. In other words, I have a little bit of fraying and wearing and tearing of the tendons. My bursa might be a little irritated, but it's all subclinical until we do an activity that kind of stirs things up. That mm-hmm. activity is something as simple as shoveling for the first time this winter.
Okay.
Raking leaves. So something that you don't think of as being aggravating, but it's a big repetitive motion that usually is enough that stirs things up that sends people into the cascade of subacromial pain or shoulder pain.
Mm. I'm wondering about posture. Is poor posture a cause for shoulder pain?
It can absolutely be a contributing factor to shoulder pain. So Jill and I have been talking about a fairly specific kind of shoulder pain, and that's this subacromial pain syndrome where you have this cluster of things that can become inflamed, the long head of the biceps, the rotator cuff tendon, the subacromial bursa. But you also have postural factors. And that's why at the very beginning when Jill talked about the therapeutic exercise that helps with this syndrome, it is exercises for the shoulder and the scapula around the shoulder blade, because the shoulder blade actually provides the base of support for your shoulder joint itself. And so if you are weak around your shoulder blade, or if you have poor posture with rounded shoulders, and now everyone is sitting up straight, right? Pulling their shoulders back, kind of squeezing their shoulder blades together and back. That improves the position of your shoulder to decrease the pressure on the subacromial tissue. So your shoulder blade and your posture set the right position to decrease the stress. Just like if you sit at your desk and you have poor posture all day, you may end up with back pain because your back is not in good posture. The same is true for your shoulder. Your shoulder blade sets the right posture to keep your shoulder joint itself healthy.
Mm-hmm. And a common analogy for this is the golf ball and the tee analogy, and your scapula is the tee and your humeral head is the golf ball. And Larry, as you know, if you don't put that tee in perfectly vertical in the ground when you go to tee off, if it's crooked, yes, the ball's going to fall off or it's going to be at a weird angle, and the exact same thing happens with your shoulder blade. So we need the tee or the scapula to be in a really good position to kind of receive the ball, the humeral head, and keep it in an optimal position, keeping that space open that Lori alluded to where the bursa and the rotator cuff are. Otherwise, they get compressed.
Matthew in Warren, Illinois, has a question that relates directly to here to what we're talking about. So let's go there. Matthew, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me on. I'm a very active adult. I'm 59. I do Ironman triathlons and a lot of construction work. And this year, or last year, I should say, I'd have both rotator cuffs surgery on both arms. My left arm went out the year before, and the surgeon essentially looked at me, my MRIs, and said, you know, this isn't a one-off injury. This was something that happened of years of abuse. And you also may have had weak tendons due to, his one example was antibiotics when I was a baby, which I did have. I was in the hospital when I was very young, and I had a lot of antibiotics. He says that can make the tendons brittle. And then even though I was doing physical therapy for the left arm and did it for both arms, the right arm got damaged in October from a very, again, very minor incident. And he said, look, this looks just like the other one. Let's put you back together again. So I had surgery about 3 weeks ago. The question is, if the tendon from something that happened decades ago, what can I do to allow me to continue to swim and do physical work going forward without this happening again? Is there anything that makes the tendons stronger.
Hmm.
Loading.
Well, let's back up for a minute. And you said you had surgery on both your shoulders. Did you have a rotator cuff repair, or did they debride things and clean things up? Matthew, do you know exactly what they did?
Yes, they did a repair. In fact, the left shoulder, he said, look, this looks like you fell off of a roof. He said, even though you didn't. He said, this is decades of overuse, because I've done, I build buildings, I do construction, I do manufacturing. And I'm not, as he pointed out, I'm not built like a laborer, so I've overdone things. And
so did you have a decompression as well, Matthew?
They did some scraping of the bone. They moved something around a bit with the bicep, and they had to put back together the tendon. And he had to actually use some sort of a webbing on the one arm, because he said he couldn't pull the tendon far enough to completely reattach it. Although that was the first arm, and I have full range of motion back in that arm, and I'm able to use it now, although it's still weak.
So okay. it sounds like your rotator cuff tear was so far retracted, meaning it was so old that the two ends of the tissue couldn't be pulled together, and so they used a mesh. When they scraped those things you were talking about, they probably gave you a little bit more space in there. And then the last thing you talked about was moving the biceps tendon, and that's called a tenodesis. And a lot of times people, the insertion of their biceps tendon can be a pain generator, and so they relocate it to your humeral head. And again, that kind of opens up that subacromial space that Lori and I were referring to make more space for the bursa. You might have had a bursectomy, rotator cuff repair, things like that. So your question, though, was prevention.
Right. Yeah. So did you go to physical therapy afterwards?
Yes, I went to last one was done in February, and I went through physical therapy through October and did all the therapy at home all the time myself, because I want to be able to swim again. And the surgeon was like, look, my main concern, my main complaint with this operation is people can't raise their arm properly afterwards because they don't do the stretching. They don't do the PT. So I did PT, but I did it with both arms so that I would keep the right arm strong so nothing would happen to it. And then, of course, it went out in October. And
okay.
So have you been back to swimming?
Oh, no. First of all, partly because of COVID.
Right.
And the other arm was only done 3 weeks ago. So I'm still, don't raise it for 3 months and don't pick up anything heavier than a coffee cup.
Right. So, well, you're going to need to obviously go through the physical therapy program again, just like you did before. And then hopefully your physical therapist will take you through a functional progression. And that is gradually honing your program and fine tuning your program towards the kinds of range of motion and muscle activations that you need to be able to swim and to do your construction. So the question is, after your repairs, are your shoulders going to be able to manage both of those activities? Because that's a lot of load, both construction and swimming. So if you picked one or the other, we'd say, yeah, maybe we can get you back to that. Getting back to both, I think, is an open question. So you may have to decide to prioritize one over the other. So that's A. Second of all, when you go back to swimming, I would, if you haven't had any coaching or haven't worked with a physical therapist who specializes in swimming, I would do that and get a good stroke analysis done, do some underwater cameras to make sure that your swimming stroke is as optimal as it can be given the surgeries that you have. Starting back in with activities that do not have an out-of-water recovery, using things like flippers to offload your shoulders may be a way to get back in carefully, but you're going to definitely need guidance to get back to swimming, given the amount of time that you've been out and to surgeries.
Right. That's a lot of load on your shoulder between those two things, Lori. I agree.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Matthew. Appreciate your call. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody, our guest today as we deal with, starting with shoulder pain, but we'll take other physical therapy questions as well as we move along today. Mackenzie Crummy, our producer today, our on-air producer, Jill Nadeau, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Today, to celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King Day, we have a special broadcast coming up, and it's coming up at noon today, as a matter of fact. It's a rebroadcast of the 2021 official Wisconsin celebration and tribute, and hosted by Dr. Jonathan Overby. Then at 8 this evening, you can hear a special edition of Why Race Matters, and it's hosted by Angela Fitzgerald of PBS Wisconsin's Wisconsin Life. And of course, you can find out more at WPR.org. Visiting right now about physical therapy issues with Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW, and Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Good to have you listening in. And we'll go back to the phones. Norman in Wausau, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a couple of problems that might be answered by your physical therapist. I went to 24 sessions at a warm water pool for what is osteoarthritis of my knees and a little bit in my back. But then about 2.5 months ago, after climbing up a ladder to do some overhead work, I got severe pain in my left buttock, even had a little nodule there at times, and it really bothers when I try to lay down in bed at night. And then more recently, it's also gone to my anterior lateral left thigh. So if I press on it when that happens, it's really, really painful. But it's not painful all the time. And if I bend way down, like to get something off the floor, that can really trigger it off on my thigh. Not necessarily on my butt. That's just pressure in that area, the left mid butt.
Hmm.
So when you say you push on it and you create that anterolateral thigh pain, are you saying when you push on your buttock, Norman?
Usually it's on the muscle itself and the leg between the hip and the knee. When the buttock is painful, which seems to be at the end of the time I'm done taking all my pain meds, because I should tell you I'm taking a whole bunch of pain medications so that I can get some sleep, because it's really hard to go to sleep when you have pain.
Right. Yeah.
So did you see somebody for this, or is the pain medication for this current episode of left buttock and anterolateral thigh pain?
Yes, I've seen a neurologist and a physiatrist, and I had an MRI of it also.
And what did the MRI show us?
Well, compared to one I had done 4 years ago for a slightly different problem, the radiologist at least said that he didn't see much difference. I have not yet had a chance to talk to the neurologist who is going to be reviewing those films.
Okay.
So do you have some arthritis in your back or some disc problems in your back that are unchanged?
That could be. I did have a fixation of the sacral S1 L5 on the left side with a cage, and then those bars they put in on either side.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So my guess is that when you were doing that ladder climbing, that you kind of stirred some things up. So you have to realize that the load is distributed throughout your lumbar spine, through your low back, across all those different levels of your vertebrae. And when you fuse at one level, like at L5, S1, you know, the work that level was supposed to do gets shifted to somebody else. It's kind of like if you're out working in the fields and the guy next to you sits down and you know, has a long drink of water, you're working twice as hard to keep things going. So when you fuse at L5, S1, L5 shifts its workload up to L4. And the area that you complain of your symptoms down into your anterolateral thigh are L4. So it may be that you just stirred things up. Maybe you don't have any new disc herniations that they've found on the MRI, but that the degenerative disc disease and joint disease that you have existing there has flared and it's putting pressure on that nerve root.
The other thing, you know, you had mentioned, Norman, is that your MRI doesn't look very different than 4 years ago, but here you are with symptoms. And the thing I always tell patients is, you know, if you think about your MRI, you're doing it laying down and your back is not loaded. You had mentioned that you get a lot of pain when, like, you're standing up and bending down to reach something. So we don't know what happens to your structures when you do those motions. So what we know is we have this snapshot of what it looks like statically. So that's why it's really important not to just put a lot of weight on the imaging themselves, but also take a huge amount of consideration into the clinical presentation of the patient. So I was interested that you had mentioned that you had 24 sessions of aquatic therapy for some arthritis in your knees and things like that, and wondering if you should see a physical therapist for this, either for some land-based things or to get back in the pool.
Yeah, I think
those were a couple of thoughts that went through my head.
Yeah, I think getting back in the pool would be a great place to start. If you're taking a lot of medication and having a lot of pain, just getting in the pool while you wait for your visit mm-hmm. with your neurologist would be a great way to help minimize your pain and get you active and moving in a way that doesn't put a lot of stress on your back.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. Good luck, Norman. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Jim and Wanakee a chance to join in. Jim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, thanks for the program. Yes, I'm calling on behalf of a friend of mine that's really pretty miserable. He has some serious hip problems, and he's been working with rehab medicine and PT and so forth for a number of years. And he went to see an orthopedic surgeon and got turned down for even any consideration for hip surgery, which he heard was really fantastic, and they can do it with older people. This guy is an older guy. And so said that they told him he's a poor risk for surgery and that they wouldn't do it, and really had nothing much to offer. Is there any program, any person at the UW that maybe he could see to get an opinion that maybe specializes, PT person, OT, rehab doctor, whatever, mm-hmm. that maybe specializes in hip work? I'm concerned about him because he has to climb stairs. He's in horrible pain. I'm afraid he's going to fall. He's very active all of his life. Yeah.
Those are all very valid concerns. So when the orthopod said he wasn't a surgical candidate because he was too high risk, is there a medical issue that makes him high risk?
Yeah, there's a number of them, including he's had more than one stroke. He's had, he's got atrial fibrillation,
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot. So, yeah, it's, you know, the risk of an event during surgery, it's just not worth it for the potential benefit. And if he, you know, it's hard to say at this point. You said he's seen somebody in rehab medicine and he's seen physical therapy. So I don't know if this is really an orthopedic issue or if this is a neuro issue. I don't know if the residual impairments that your friend might have had from his stroke mm-hmm. are overloading his hip, and that if they went in and did surgery because of the underlying issues from his stroke, if there would be no benefit from the surgery because right. of the issues related to a stroke, I just don't know the answer to that.
Right.
So
I'm trying to think of things to kind of control his pain. Has your friend had any injections? Has anybody in rehab medicine injected his hip, and did he have any benefits from that? Do you know?
Yes. Yes. For about 5 days, and then it went back and,
okay. Yeah. So it's very short term. So I'm guessing it's unfortunate that, like Lori alluded to, there could be changes in the hip. And even if they went in somehow and fixed those changes, if your friend doesn't have the muscle strength or the neuromuscular control because of his stroke, if he's got some impairments with that, it's not going to get him any better. Yeah, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so sometimes finding a program that he can participate in that helps keep him active and offloads his hip, and of course I always think of the pool as a place for him to potentially join an exercise class. The exercise that he could get unweighted in a pool would help with his sensation and his spatial awareness relative to his stroke, as well as his strength and mobility in his hip. So those are the things that come to mind. But just given the limited information we have, you know, he's seen PT, he's seen rehab medicine. It does sound like he's high risk for surgery, and the outcomes of surgery may not be what he would expect anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So the pool would be a good option then. Jim, good luck. Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks for caring for your friend.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Well, Deleuze in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, how can we help?
Well, a couple things. Last March, I developed some type of tendonitis in my right foot, and then just recently, within the last few weeks, have developed what I believe is plantar fasciitis in my left heel. So something on each foot. But so I did end up, as far as treatment, I wore a boot for a while. I did some oral, like dose pack. Yes, thank you. And then I did also have two injections, and all of that seemed to help. But it never really got back to 100%. And so they sent me to PT, and I did do probably about a couple months of PT once or twice a week and did the exercises. And again, it just seems like it has plateaued, and I can't get it back to 100%. Now, today, just went for a walk today, and it didn't bother me at all. Other times, it does. It's kind of hit and miss sometimes, but it always hurts when I push off, like if to like get out of a car or something like that. That always has the same kind of pain, but it doesn't stop me from walking or anything like that. But it's just frustrating because it hasn't, you know, completely gone away.
Yeah,
right. So is it, you had mentioned all this and you've been in a boot. What, can you tell me what tendon? Was it your Achilles tendon, or where is this tendon located in your foot?
The diagnosis was extensor tendonitis of foot with sinus tarsi syndrome.
Okay, so it was medial side. Okay.
So is that, are you talking about your right foot or your left foot? Because you've talked about injections and stuff, right? Did you get your...
I think that's
right foot injected. Well, but then she had left foot plantar fasciitis. So is that what you wore a boot for? Did you wear a boot for the right foot?
No, for the right foot. And that was last March is when that occurred. The plantar fasciitis is within the last month. So
everything you've talked about for the injections and the PT and everything is for your right foot.
Okay.
Okay. Correct. So, so do you know what brought this on?
No, it was completely out of the blue. There was no trauma. I didn't do anything to it. I woke up one morning and it
was. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you do a lot of walking for work or anything like that?
No, it's just walking for exercise.
Okay.
Okay. And for the most part, do you have what we would consider a normal foot posture? I mean, are you flat-footed? Yeah. Do you have a high arch?
No, I think it's pretty normal. They did do an x-ray too, and nothing showed up on the x-ray. So, and when I was first evaluated for PT, I mean, she made no indication that anything was, you know, out of the norm, that anything to be concerned of.
Okay. All right. So things have plateaued.
Yes.
Do you notice any difference with your shoe wear or what kind of shoes you wear?
Well, I had, prior to this happening, gotten a new pair of shoes. It's the same. I always have purchased New Balance, and the tongue on my new shoe seems like it was, well, it is a lot thicker and not hard, but it's much more present. My old shoes that I was wearing prior to this happening, the tongue was much thinner and not nearly as So they thought that might have aggravated the area.
Very
so
well
now I've gone back. I've gone back to wearing my old shoes, and it hasn't gone away. And I've been wearing them now for, you know, for several months.
Okay. If the old shoes are worn out, then that may not be
a good thing.
Right. As well. So, right. I'm wondering if some sort of, I'm thinking sort of athletic training, if there's too much pressure on that extensor tendon, if we need to offload that somehow with some kind of padding or some such thing to offload that tendon and then continue with the exercises. And then the sinus tarsi, I'm not sure where the sinus tarsi comes in unless she is really pronating. And loading through there.
Right.
So looking at foot posture, have you tried different orthotics?
No, I haven't tried any orthotics.
You haven't even tried an off-the-shelf? I would start with some off-the-shelf orthotics and see if they make a difference. So, you know, you say you have a fairly normal foot posture, and you probably do, but the fact that you had this and you have a little bit of plantar fasciitis on your left foot makes me think that she's got at least a little pronatory component somewhere in the process where she's pronating just enough to irritate these things a little bit.
Right.
And, you know, I hear you, Delise, you buy the same shoe and you're expecting it to be perfect. I did the exact same thing and I had problems as well. I'm back in my old shoes too, which probably isn't a good idea. So I totally understand you with that. I'm wondering if an off the shelf orthotic.
Her old shoes.
Something like a Superfeet or something.
Yep. Something like that.
Would be a really good place to start. Research has shown that for the most part, off-the-shelf orthotics are just as good as custom. So that would be a really reasonable place to start. If your sporting goods store, or your running shoe store carries Superfeet, that's something that I have a tendency to go to. I don't know if there's any brands you like, Lori.
Yeah, I go with Sole, but that's an online only order. So, but just going to your local, you know, REI carries them. A lot of running companies carry them. So, I'd start with that. I think you're right. The combination of those things plus the old shoes probably doesn't give enough support. And make sure that your shoes, that the heel counter is not broken down. The back of the heel, I hope you're not taking your shoes on and off with them tied. So that's my mantra for all the parents out there. Make your kids untie their shoes when they take them off. Because if you break down the counter on the back of the shoe, then your orthotic doesn't function like it's supposed to.
Right.
Good luck. Thank you, Delise, for calling. Appreciate it. Andrea in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I have a long history of getting tendinopathies from a very early age, starting peroneal in my shin and Achilles tendon. And what I wasn't really aware of at the time is I have my calcaneal heel bone protrudes out to the side on both feet. And so as last caller was talking about, I actually rub holes in the backs of all of my shoes.
Yep, those are called pump bumps.
Yeah. So it's limited any kind of shoe that is not really well cushioned. But what I have developed now, I've realized, is contractures. So there's multiple muscles that are pulling my feet out. So I walk on the outside edges of my feet, which has progressed to pulling the fibula out and creating really pronounced knock knees. And it has progressed to my hips. I also have contractures in my elbows and wrists and shoulders. So it's been progressive. And as my gait and posture has changed due to some of these, I believe it seems to have contributed to the further progression. I'm not quite sure yet. The pathology of where these contractures are coming from is still being investigated. But I'm finding the only thing that seems to, that I've found relief from is like high frequency vibration, to the point that it will force the muscle to release. However, this is incredibly time consuming. I mean, like 8 hours a day of trying to use different types of vibration to get a muscle to release. I just don't know. Is there anything that provides maybe more efficient or effective relief? Is this just going to be kind of temporary fixes, or is there anything that you're aware of?
Yeah.
So this has been going on most of your life, and no one has come up with any particular diagnosis for this problem?
That is correct. There has been a lot of, I think things have evolved, and, you know, there's been, I've had tendinopathies in so many different muscles. I recently had an MRI due to severe hip pain and very limited mobility. I had MRI of my pelvis to see if there was sacroiliitis. They found that I had labral tears in both hips, and I had some other things, but they said they felt that it was actually probably incidental, and I had really pronounced tendinopathies in both hamstrings and psoas.
Okay.
So, no, I forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead, Jill.
Oh, so interesting, Andrea. Are you loose jointed? Do you consider yourself hypermobile? Can you hyperextend at your elbows, hyperextend at your knees, things like that?
Well, that's very interesting. So I did recently, a couple years back, have a clinical diagnosis of hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos.
Oh, well, there you have it.
There you go. Yeah. So EDS. So yeah. Hypermobile EDS.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Truly, so I wasn't that, very convinced about that diagnosis myself.
But we already, that's the first thing we thought of when you started describing your symptoms. That's where both went there right away. So yes, absolutely. So you need to be really seen by someone who specializes in hypermobility. So there are people at UW who specialize in this. The vibration is one intervention, but there's a host of other things that, that can be done. Your labral tears, your tendinopathies, those are all just classic of people who are hypermobile. Your muscles feel tight because they're working so hard to provide stability that you inherently lack. And so it takes a lot of work to find a balance of the right kind of activities and interventions for people with this diagnosis. Sometimes people will come in and say, oh, my muscle, my joints are so tight. You know, I wish I was looser. I wouldn't wish being this loose on somebody. It's much more difficult to treat.
Yeah. And the other thing is the muscles, you have all this tightness in your muscles. Well, they're doing something. They're stabilizing your joint. I'm a little concerned if you take away that stability and you don't have stability in the correct muscles, Andrea, that you could actually be making yourself worse. I just want to say one other thing quick is hypermobility EDS is a diagnosis of exclusion. There aren't lab tests, there aren't tests. There's not a genetic marker for this that we know of yet. All the other Ehlers-Danlos conditions have a marker. This one doesn't. And it's kind of a diagnosis of, well, you got to fit into these clinical categories. And if you do, then you have it. So I understand your frustration with it because there isn't a lab test or anything for it, but I feel very confident, as does Lori. As a matter of fact, I held up a piece of paper that said hypermobile on it when you were about 30 seconds into your talk.
Yeah.
So yeah, good luck with everything. This is difficult. Like Lori said, this is a very, very challenging thing to do.
Good luck, Andrea. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening in today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapists at the UW, and great to have them with us. Lots of callers online, so we'll go back to the phones and Jan in Madison next. Jan, hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. All three of you, you are absolutely wonderful, all three. Here is my situation. I became a statistic with the Wisconsin Falls. Twice within 2 months. And first of all, it was on ice, unfortunately. My left arm was very colorful and bruised from the lower arm up to my angel wings. It was painful, but it has healed, and I have full range of motion and almost no pain. On January 3rd, I put on my hiking boots and my stabilizers and went off to a storm, but didn't take the stabilizers off. Snow melted, and I fell in the puddle of wet, the wet floor. So I had an identical injury with the egg swelling below the elbow and bruising and pain. Went to urgent care, had x-rays of the shoulder, arm, and elbow, no broken bones. But here's my two questions. It's healing slowly, but should I see a physical therapist to have him or her recommend exercises? And number two, if you say yes, would I get a physical therapist quicker if I had a referral from my primary, or could I get it quicker with just going to the physical therapy department that I've used before?
Yeah. So those are great questions, Jan. And I think one or two visits to make sure that you have really good mobility in your arm and adequate strength would be good. And the other thing is a physical therapist can help you with some falls prevention strategies, although both of these seem to be related to surface, floor, things like that. But giving you a few lower extremity exercises would be good. With regards to scheduling an appointment within the state of Wisconsin, you can see a physical therapist without having a referral from your physician. So from a timing perspective, unless the clinic has a policy about a referral, and Lori, I'm going to refer to you on that, no pun intended. If the facility has a policy where you need a referral, that might change things. And your insurance might require a referral. So those are variables. But from a, can I go see a physical therapist in the state of Wisconsin without a referral? The answer is yes. So Lori, maybe you know more about the referrals in a large system.
Yeah. So typically the best thing to do is if you have a history with a clinic is to call them. And they probably have your insurance information on file if it is not changed, and they can tell you if you need a referral. Most of the time, the physical therapist can see you for one visit, and they can do the evaluation, and then they may have to send information to the insurance company, or they may have to go back to your primary care physician and have them sign off on a plan of care that the physical therapist has established. But when you call the clinic, they should be able to tell you those specifics based upon your insurance. So I'd probably start at the clinic that you saw. And you know, just for the general listeners, when you fall and land on an outstretched arm, if you are an older individual, you are most likely to tear your rotator cuff. Mm-hmm. So just being aware that if you have residual shoulder pain that is not resolving, it's a good idea to go in and be seen. Chances are you're not going to break something unless you have underlying osteoporosis. You're more likely to tear your rotator cuff.
Good luck. Thank you so much, Jan, for calling. And Peggy in Darlington, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I'm going to try to make a complicated situation simple. My husband had an AC separation in July of 2020, and he's gone through extensive physical therapy and steroidal injections. He has had some additional falls, and one I remember was on October 5th. October 12th, he saw the orthopedic doctor who gave him an injection in his biceps tendon because an MRI showed a fusion there and around the joint. But at that appointment, he said, I have a muff-like feeling around my wrists. He ordered an MRI of his cervical spine, and we're still waiting to get that done. But in the meantime, he's developed very classic ulnar nerve symptoms to the point that his hands are non-functional. Any idea for physical therapy exercises specifically now for the ulnar nerve?
Well, it depends upon if the ulnar nerve, where along the course of the ulnar nerve the damage is. Is it coming from a cervical spine or is it coming from around his elbow? It's fairly superficial around your elbow. Jill's waving her pencil at me. You go, girl. What?
Well, the other thing I think about is with the ulnar nerve is, could it be a little thoracic outlet-ish and be somehow snagged up at his shoulder, particularly if he's had some falls, like you alluded to, and how the shoulder can be so vulnerable, Lori. I'm just wondering between he's got some pathology at his biceps and he has an AC separation, if the hang-up could also be from the shoulder.
Yeah, well, it could be. Yeah, there are a number of suspects on that list, starting at the cervical spine to the shoulder to the elbow, and even at the wrist. If he's had a fallen and outstretched hand, he could have damaged the ulnar nerve at the wrist. So, pending the outcome of the cervical spine MRI, that will provide information on that as the source of pain. But back to your original question, go see a physical therapist.
Absolutely.
That specializes in spine, and they will be able to sort out through the different evaluation and assessment tests that they do the most likely source of the symptoms. They can test different muscles, ones that are innervated by the ulnar nerve, like farther up in the chain and then farther down. So they may be able to determine if it is primarily a cervical spine problem, a shoulder problem, an elbow problem, and so on. But I would absolutely get in as soon as you can, especially if he's losing function in his hand.
Right.
Good luck. Thank you, Peggy. You mentioned frozen shoulder. What causes it, and how do you prevent it?
Shoulders are idiopathic.
Right. If we could answer both those questions, Lori and I could retire.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because yes, there's typically no trauma, or there's a very, very, very mild trauma that can set off the downward spiral of frozen shoulder. What happens is your shoulder kind of lays down this dense, thick scar tissue. Kind of overreacts to a minimal insult, if any insult at all. We know it's more prevalent in women between the ages of 40 and 60. Some people get it bilaterally. Some people get it concurrently. Some people seek care for it. Some people can ride it out and they never even enter the healthcare system for it. For some people, it's completely debilitating.
And it's also more prevalent in people who have underlying diabetes.
Right.
Oh. So. Janice wondered, she thinks that you need to change your exercise routine every 4 to 6 weeks. Does that mean you should have two exercise plans and switch back and forth? And also wonders if yoga positions need to be changed every 4 to 6 weeks for the same reason.
Well, variety is the spice of life. So I think changing things up frequently and often is great. I don't know where the 4 to 6 weeks came from, unless she's thinking about kind of after 4 to 6 weeks, your muscles get good neuromuscular control and she wants to go on to something else. But I think mixing it up is really good. I don't know that there's a hard and fast time frame. Do you, Lori?
No, except, to build strength, particularly if you're working strength in a new muscle group, then you're looking at 12 weeks, really, before you notice before there's changes in the muscle. There are neuromuscular changes that happen in the earlier phase, but keeping variety, not doing, something for 4 to 6 weeks and then changing it, but having variety throughout the course of your week, mixing up your cardio, the positions that you're in, the yoga, different positions, absolutely, so that you get a good balance of flexors, extensors, and so on.
Well, on that happy note, we are about out of time today because at noon, we have a special broadcast coming. It's a rebroadcast of the 2021 official Wisconsin celebration and tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King, and it's hosted by Jonathan Overby. So that's coming up in just a minute or so. But in the meantime, I want to thank Jill and Lori. Thank you both for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it very much.
Jill, hey,
thank you, Lori. Have a great day, everybody.
Jill Tai-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tine-Brody, a physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's kind of the way it goes. thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Coming up, the celebration for Dr. Martin Luther King. I'm Larry Mueller.